Welcome, movers and shakers. I'm your host, Edwina McKinnon, and we are about to level up on Move Her Forward. Whether you're tuning in for the first time or have been on this journey with me from the start, we truly appreciate you and the energy that you bring every episode. Thank you for your support every step of the way. We're still diving deep into our wealth series. And guess what? We're bringing some incredible male guest speakers to the table because progress is a collective effort. And together, we're all going to move forward. So grab your headphones, get a pen and paper, settle in, and let's listen, learn, and yes, level up. So today, I wanted to welcome a very special guest. His name is Mike Yat, and he stands at the intersection of real estate innovation and strategic wealth creation. He is a seasoned real estate investor, broker, and strategist. He runs a Toronto-based Yat Group Real Estate, where it is honestly in the hub of the city. He is known for his professionalism and client-focused approach. Mike and his dedicated team are committed to empowering homeowners, guiding them to leverage their properties in many ways that are unparalleled financial freedom and wealth accumulation. Demonstrating his commitment to the community and the future, Mike has started the Yat Family Student Athlete Award in 2020 at the University of Toronto, celebrating the dedication and just the excitement of the varsity men and women soccer players. So I welcome our guest today, Mike. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate being here.
Awesome. And all of my listeners know that we take the fluff out of a conversation and we just dive right into strategy. So I'm so excited to have you a part of this episode. We're going to be talking about a lot of different things when it comes to business. And something that's really exciting to me is we're going to be talking about sales. And I've actually been in sales for about 25 years, and I don't want to expose my age, but I've been in sales for a very long time. But I feel like, you know what, sales is a lifestyle. So I'm really excited to dive into this topic, and we'll start with sales, but we're going to be going all around talking about how to start a business. We're going to talk about entrepreneurship, how to be successful, how to stay in business, and real estate. So just everybody again, lock in, grab that pen and paper, and let's go. So Mike, let's talk about sales. The first thing I'll ask you is, when you think about the word sales itself, what is some of your core values that come to mind?
Okay, well, first of all, thank you for that intro. That's probably one of the best intros I've ever had in all the different shows and programs I've done.
So when it comes to sales, what is the first thing that comes to your mind and just like your core values around sales?
Core values around sales. I mean, sales for me is independence, because with the skills of sales, you can never be out of a job. You know, it doesn't matter what's coming. When you look at every company that's out there, sales is their top line, and they'll always need that to be able to stay, to stay in business and to stay relevant. So my core values when it comes to sales, it's independence, it's freedom, it's control, and you get to write your own paycheck.
Yeah, I love that. Something that you said is like, you're always going to be in business. Like when we think about companies and corporations, like I never really see them letting go salespeople, right? It's always like customer service or people that is like C-suite, but they're never going to go to a sales team and be like, yeah, we're going to let you go. Or even if you're in business, like that's really not the first thing that you want to cut is your sales process or even your marketing, right? So words of wisdom just dropping already. So when you look at sales, what do you think is the most common misconception people have about sales? And I'll be honest with you, Mike, every time I do talk about sales to certain individuals, I find like some of the entrepreneurs and business owners, they almost get anxiety around just the word sales. So what is like a top misconception that you think people have about sales?
You know what? I think it has to do with a lot of upbringing, especially when you spend a lot of time getting a degree, getting a post-secondary degree and a master's degree. You know, the idea of sales, you know, is almost counterintuitive to the idea of going to get an education. So I think there's a lot of maybe it's cultural, maybe it's just society. We don't really embrace salespeople. even myself as a real estate agent, a lot of people that are also in my profession are very reluctant to address themselves as salespeople. But that is, in fact, what you are. You are a salesperson. You're there to help individuals buy. You're there to help individuals sell. You're there to help individuals invest. And I think part of why the fear, maybe it's not a, maybe 10, 15 years ago, wasn't a profession that a lot of individuals looked at as maybe very high rewarding, or maybe it's the security or the lack of security that's involved in the industry. So because of that, they might want to shy away from it. But sales for me has always been, is, you know, as an entrepreneur, your number one thing that you also have to understand is you're a salesperson first. You have to sell your idea, you have to sell your product, you have to sell the team if you're growing a team. You know, you have to go and sell. If you're raising capital, you have to sell investors, or if you're collecting it from the public source, you have to sell the government as to why they should invest and give you that grant or give you that donation. And if you've ever been in a relationship, you're in sales. You know, you have to convince somebody, you know, to go on a date or multiple dates with you, you know, and in that process, you know, you had your best face, your best fit, and you also made sure that it's not about you in that moment. It's really about connecting with that other individual. So sales for me is just different ways of making connections to get to an end goal that's usually is the exchange of a product or a service.
Yeah, I love that. Like, you really tackle, you know, my philosophy around sales. It's a lifestyle. And I was just like laughing here because you said something that's so true. Like, if you're dating, you have to really sell yourself to your future partner. Yes. Because I'm pretty sure they're going on many dates and they have to like choose who the right person is. So like you nailed it right on the head. Sales is a lifestyle. And you talked about the culture around sales. And I just wanted you to elaborate a little bit more on what you meant by that, just for our listeners. How does culture come into not really accepting sales as a profession?
Well, I mean, I was born in Nigeria, and you know, my dad has a PhD in chemistry, my mom's a lawyer. So I went to school as well. I went to post-secondary and I went to University of Toronto. I got an economics degree. So when I came out of that, to go into business and to go into sales was not something that culturally was looked upon. I mean, at my wedding a few years ago, everybody on the Nigerian side had a doctor next to their name. So, you know, being Africans, especially being Nigerian, there's a lot of pressure in terms of accolades to be a doctor, an engineer, a lawyer. So, you know, we have culturally, especially, you know, in my culture, we haven't really embraced the spirit of sales and entrepreneurship. You know, we're getting better now because now we're seeing that, hey, you know what? The philosophy of going to school, go get a good job, go get good grades, and somebody will be able to take care of you for the rest of your life till you retire. I think that philosophy, most people have realized, you know, doesn't work. It doesn't work long term because most companies today, they build to sell the company or they build for an exit. It's very rare to see individuals launch a company and that company is going to be around 20 to 30 to 40 years. So culturally in my community, it started off as a challenge. It's a little bit more easier today for me to, you know, to step into my role, you know, in sales as an entrepreneur, as a business person, and it be accepted as, you know, as acceptable. But also, results don't lie. And I think ultimately, when you're in sales, you kind of have that notion of, you know, I'm going to live and die by my results. You know, so if it goes well, it's typically, you know, we usually attribute it to ourselves, whether it goes well or whether it doesn't. And that's just the mindset you really need to have in order to go down and have a long career, you know, doing sales.
Yeah, you said something that's so true. Like, results don't lie, right? Like, so people can say a lot of things about salespeople, but you know, when you start getting paid And you start seeing those results from all you got to do is talk and serve and sell. Like it's crazy, you know, the financial shift that you'll have just being a salesperson. So yeah, I wanted you to dive a little bit deeper because a lot of cultures, still up till today, they have that, you know, if you go and you say you want to be a salesperson, they're like, find something else to do. Right. But yeah, I love that you said that. So I always run into introverts, and I have a lot of introverts that say sales is not for them, and they're entrepreneurs, and they're like saying, you know, I'm an introvert, I'm not an extrovert, I don't really do the sales thing, I don't really like to talk even. Mm-hmm. What are some strategies that can really truly help someone who's really a natural introvert excel in sales and in turn build wealth and be successful in their business?
That's a very good question. And there's different styles, and I'm sure there's different books. There's a lot of different ways you can go with that in terms of, especially somebody who's introverted. I mean, the easiest thing is to find something that you love, something that's, you know, a product or a service, or maybe it's something you can really get behind and it's consistent with who you are. So even myself, as great as I am, and I've sold across different, I've sold paint, I've sold signages, you know, I've sold advertising, I've sold solar panels. So I've done a vast amount of sales. And one thing that I know with myself, there's certain, once I'm in a product or a service or something that really aligns really well with what my values are, with what my philosophy is, it's a lot easier for me to, you know, to push it in terms of, and be sold out to it in terms of sales. Like real estate, I believe, is a tool for, you know, being able to get ahead in life, being able to, you know, create financial freedom, and being able to create generational wealth. So selling real estate is not a hard thing for me to be able to do. But if you ask me to go out there and sell calculators, you know, I might have a little bit of a challenge in that, you know, I can learn a little bit of specs. I can learn a little bit of, you know, who the competition is and who's out there in the market. I think it's a lot easier to align yourself with something that you believe in, and then you will find naturally. I think the best way to think about it is, and you've probably heard this analogy used before, you know, have you ever referred somebody to a restaurant? Have you ever referred somebody to a movie? You know, so sales, you can be looked at in that way as well, as an introvert perspective, where you're not really selling per se, but you're sharing information, you're adding value to people that, you know, something was beneficial to you and you can pass it on. You saw a good movie, you saw sales for shoes, you know, you saw that there was something coming out that will help somebody else, you know, with their, with the outcome that they're looking for. So it's easy to get behind that. I think part of what people, what the negative notions are behind sales and maybe why introverts feel they can't do it is the idea that you have to push something down somebody's throat. Maybe that's a product or service that you don't believe in. And that is going to go against what your core values are and your philosophy. But the way I see sales more is being able to sort through people fast. So being able to identify who's a buyer, who's a seller, who's a customer, who is this product going to make sense for, and who does the timing make sense for? Because you and I could be interested in a product or service today, but the timing might not align with us. So this is where you need other skills. You need to know how to follow up. You need to know how to not take rejection personally. You need to know how to just organize yourself, get through the numbers, and that will help you, you know, with the journey and your end goal.
Yeah, you're getting ahead of us talking about like the sales process, right? So we're going to definitely talk about the sales process. But yeah, I think you dropped a lot of gems for those that are introverts. And, you know, just a personal journey of myself too. Like I remember when I was getting into sales and I was I'm an extrovert, so naturally okay to talk to people. But I really wanted to refine my skill set. And I remember at a very young age, I actually used to show up at Tim Hortons with my business cards and just practice handing it out and talking to people at Tim Hortons. And I remember I said to myself, I wouldn't leave that Tim Hortons until 70% of the people in there knew what I did, know my name. And that actually worked wonders. So I just like the fact that you said just get out of your comfort zone and just like start talking about things that is connected to your core values, right? Because that's really important, because if you're selling something that you technically don't really believe in and you don't understand how it's really helping somebody else in the long term, then you kind of get disconnected from that product, right? And that service that you're selling, and then people don't really want to buy from you. But I think confidence is also a big thing too, Mike, when it comes to selling. It's like, you have to be confident in the product. You may not even love the product 100%, but you should be confident in anything that you're saying and speaking, right? So practice makes perfect, right? So that's also a few other gems. So we're actually like in a very interesting state right now. We're in the digital age. And I know that you've been in business for quite some time. What is something that you can leave our listeners with when it comes to the balance of online sales and the traditional face-to-face interactions? And also through your lens, do you think face-to-face is dead, or do you think that that's still something, that's still a thing?
Face-to-face will never die. It will never die. It's yes, it will be harder to scale as a model, but it will never die, because there's magic that happens when you get in front of someone and you start talking. You know, there's an energy that you can pull from. Or, you know, we just came back from Atlanta. You know, you could easily say, okay, well, why do we need to take a trip to Atlanta? We can just watch those audios and those videos, and we can see everything online and get the same information, right? If it's just information, why do we need to spend, you know, hundreds of dollars on a flight, hundreds of dollars on a hotel, plus meals and everything? Because we all know that there's something magical that happens when you're in front of people and you're in a room full of people and you get to shake hands and you meet someone and you look them in the eye. So I don't think face-to-face sales will ever die completely. I think just as many businesses, you have to integrate the new technologies with the traditional technologies. Some years ago, I used to be in telesales. So we would sell over the phone, which at that point I'd never done before. So I never did telesales before. And one thing that, pardon me?
No, I'm saying, okay. No, no, go ahead. Thanks.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. So I'd never done telesales before, but I had to quickly learn and adapt to the new environment. So, you know, I had to make sure that my posture, because whether you're on the phone or not, people can actually, they have a visual of what they're seeing you to be and how they perceive you to be when you're on the phone with them. You know, if you're slouchy, you know, people can kind of perceive that in your tonality and in your delivery. So one thing I was always taught to do was, you know, imagine that you're Superman, and have that visualization, because people can't see you, so they need to feel your confidence over the phone. And then another thing that I did was I took Toastmasters. So because the face-to-face is gone, you know, you need all the other elements to not work against you. And one of that is poor communication skills. Toastmasters helped me very much to be able to allow me to see how much fillers I use when I have conversations. The ums, the ahs, the wells, the ohs, you know, even that point right there that I said, you know, those are fillers. So Toastmasters really helped me with that. Fortunately, my company paid for it. We just had to show up. And funny enough, not everybody showed up. So about 15 of us showed up regularly week after week. And Toastmasters was a great asset to help you with sales in general, because a lot of us have conversations and we use a lot of fillers that we just kind of get accustomed to, you know. Again, I just did those two things. I did one brush up on my Toastmasters as well.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And for those that are listening globally, Toastmasters, if you can elaborate what that program is for those that don't know what that is.
Sure. Toastmasters is a communications program that helps individuals, you know, predominantly in management, sales, that are having conversations with different types of people on all levels, and they just want to fine tune their communication skills. So they'll help you with, you know, they have different types of, they have different types of modules that they use. You can do it in groups. You can do it in twos and in smaller groups or big groups. But it just helps you really fine tune your communication skills. So when you're having a conversation with someone, you're present to what's coming out of your mouth, because what comes out of your mouth creates life, and it actually is the difference maker with success and non-success.
Ooh, I love that. Pretty much everybody should take a program from what you're saying, or a course, just to refine that skill set. And now that you talk about, I'm like getting really conscious now when I talk. So let me try to remove the fillers from our conversation. You spoke about in passing rejection, and this comes up quite a bit when I'm consulting a lot of different entrepreneurs getting into business where they have issues with rejection, and they're terrified of that no. They have anxiety about that no. You know, with your strategies and how you've been able to just build yourself up to Mike at this point where you can get all the no's in the world, what are some stepping stones that somebody can take to really get comfortable with a no from a client?
Okay, well, from a one-on-one perspective, meaning that you're invested in yourself, your infrastructure, your business, and there's no support behind you, you know, you're going to eat what you kill. In that aspect, you have to understand that the name of the game is to go, is to, when I look at sales, I'm going in to help people make a decision. Is it a yes? Is it a no? Is it a later? Or is it a, you know, don't bother me, I'm not interested. Whatever it is. My goal when I approach somebody is to really just to help them to make a decision. You know, friends of mine will joke around, because sometimes I'll go out and within 5 minutes of meeting somebody, I'm in their minds, I'm already trying to sell somebody something. And that's not necessarily, and hey, you know what? It could be true that I'm just naturally excited about the things I do, the things that I'm involved with. So I just naturally share that with someone and see how it can be impactful for them. But I just like to get through, even when I have a sales funnel and I have a pipeline, which is if you have a team behind you, if you have infrastructure behind you, hopefully they're investing in enough leads to be able to keep you as a salesperson going as well, to be able to, you know, create your prospecting list. You know, but in some industries, you are creating your own prospecting list. If you're in insurance, if you're in real estate, or if you're in other industries, you're probably responsible for creating your own prospecting list. So in that aspect, you need to make sure that when you're approaching somebody, you know, there's your traditional sales stuff. Make sure you're talking to somebody who's making the decisions. You know, make sure you're talking to individuals that are decision makers. You know, we've all heard of BANTs, you know, budget needs, assessment, timing, and, you know, I forgot what the S stands for. But we've all heard all these sales acronyms that we've all used to identify, you know, is this person looking to make a decision? Are they the decision maker? You know, in my industry, I have to identify very quickly, is this person a buyer? Is this person a seller? Or is this person wasting my time? And once I identify that, then I go through my process to be able to, qualify that individual, you know, qualify my product service to their need, and to see if the timing fits. So that's kind of how I go through my sales cycles with individuals.
Awesome. Yeah, you're just dropping lots of gems. So again, I hope my listeners are writing this information down. Before we segue into another topic, I wanted to ask you one last question when it comes to sales. And this is about the follow-up. And I know that a lot of people think, like, you know, the sales process is you just, you know, prospecting, trying to close, but when they say no, then what happens next, right? A lot of people just kind of end the relationship off there. Mm-hmm. They say yes, or they just don't want to move forward. So, you know, what is something that you've encompassed in your business when it comes to follow-ups, and is follow-up even important in your business?
Yes. I mean, follow-ups are important in any business, because it's very hard to catch people when everything clicks. You know, there's always a timing issue. There's always a capital issue. there's always a budget issue of some sort. I think everything starts with mindset, especially if you're looking to go into sales. A lot of times, you know, I don't hear no. I always hear not right now. So when someone tells me no, you know, I hear not right now. And it doesn't mean that I'll persist with trying to close on the product, the service, or the deal. But I also know that unless I, you know, when I've learned that tracking in terms of follow-up, you know, it's important to have a good CRM system, of course. You know, that way it's a lot easier. A lot of people still use Excel. You know, I'm sometimes guilty of going back and forth between the two. Sometimes I just have, you know, notes all over my place. I have a whiteboard, you know, to the left of me, so I can look track what's happening in 90 days, what's happening in 120 days, just so I can move. You know, there's power in writing down. So I don't like to be so dependent on technology. You know, I like the process of writing something down, because it allows all the neural pathways to work within my brain, to my hands, and to my entire process as well. But I typically, you know, when I hear no, unless I've heard it maybe about 7 times, you know, it usually for me is a cue to, you know, the timing is not right, you know, follow up with them. Unless, you know, they're really not interested in the product, but at that point they'll probably say F off, and they, you know, and then move on. So I think first changing your mindset, and then just understanding that, you know, it's very rare to call somebody or to meet up with somebody and the timing is, it happens to me, and I'm sure it happens to you in your industry as well, but those are very rare. You're not going to build a very successful business on being able to just, you know, one meeting close, one call close. You usually have to go through a cycle, through a process, you know, get people to 10%, to 30%, to 50%, to 100%.
Yeah, that's some amazing gems. So I guess my takeaway is, like, you have to follow up.
Yeah.
And just because they say no, you said 7 times. So that's really interesting. That means you still have to keep following up. And I guess it's important too, they may not say yes in that moment because their lifestyle, like you said, may not be at the time where they, you know, need to your services, but it's always good to just keep your name in their mind. So when they do need your services or product, they'll remember it. So yes, love all these gems.
And also there's something that we forget with the follow-up. The follow-up is part of the purpose is to ask for referrals.
Yeah, so, that's huge.
Quick story. I mean, I had a client who bought a pre-construction for me about 5 years ago. And prior to that, he bought 2 other pre-constructions for me. So I knew he was tapped out. So I called him back because there was a killer promotion and incentive that came. And I knew there was no way he was going to buy anything else from me. And even the sound of my voice made him cringe because he couldn't believe that I was calling him to talk about pre-construction again after already purchasing, you know, 3 other products from me. And I said, look, my first thing that I said to him is I said, hey, I'm calling, but this is not for you. I'm calling because I know you know somebody that could benefit from this. And it turned out to be another sale. So he said no. As you know, he said no initially, but then once I told him the terms, not only did he refer me to someone, but then he bought another one, which I couldn't believe either. So part of the follow-up process is to ask for referrals and to just, you know, just to see what the experience has been. Or sometimes I'll call people with new information. You know, hey, you know, last time we spoke, this was what was in the market. As of today, this is what's now available. The incentives, the promotions, you know, might have changed, and this I feel will be beneficial for you. If not, is there someone that you can maybe refer me to that could benefit from these product, service, or terms?
Love it. You're building, you're gonna get us to build some successful businesses today. Like, honestly, I see it. So let's go back in the past. And when you actually first started your business, I'm pretty sure there was a lot of hurdles and a lot of, you know, trials and tribulations that you had to go through. And this is why I really appreciate my podcast, because we want to kind of prevent people from making those same mistakes, right? So when we look at, you know, when you were starting your business and you're in real estate, so I know for sure, like, that market is so saturated. I feel like I know a lot of people in real estate. So when you were actually starting, What are some things that you did to separate yourself away from what other people were doing and to kind of get you more successful every day?
That's a very good question. So when I was entering into the market, I mean, my dad looked at me and said, look, you know, you spend all this money on your education. You want to go put signs up on the weekend. That's what you want to do for a career. And I looked at him and I thought about it. But again, this is where results matter. So at the time I was looking at somebody whose results were so, you know, at the time I was maybe 24, 26. And I had a friend who had become a millionaire in real estate. And I was so confused as to how he's able to allocate this much time to generate this much sales to be able to get these kind of results. So what I did in my industry is I am at my core very lazy. I'm always looking for, you know, the fastest, the path of least resistance to be able to get to the end result, just because, you know, I don't have time to have to build something. You know, I like some things that are tried, true, and also tested. So a friend of mine had been involved in pre-construction sales because at the time, 80% of realtors didn't know anything about pre-construction sales. Most end users don't buy a home that they can't see, touch, feel, look at the finishes, look at the colors, look at the stones, and so forth. So it was a very niche market. So that's the first thing that I looked into do. I looked to master a niche set of skills. And then also I was a product of the product, meaning that I wanted to become my own customer. So I wanted to be an investor. So when I started my real estate career, I started off as an investor. And then I started to get pretty good results. And then my first 2 years, I referred over 30 people as an investor, not as a salesperson. So I referred over 30 people that, you know, went and purchased real estate through, you know, the different realtors that I was associated with. And I said to myself, you know, I could probably do this for a living because I know just as much. I've referred 30 people. So I have proof of concept that if I did this as a career, I could probably do really well in this. And also I was targeting a niche of investors. I wasn't necessarily targeting first-time homebuyers. But I would also make sure that every time I sat down with somebody that was around my age, so anybody, you know, we're talking 10 plus years ago, so anybody, you know, age 20 to 26, I made sure that I sat down with their parents because those were the decision makers, those were the individuals that controlled capital, and those were the individuals that were going to help their kids, you know, get into the market. I mean, today, I believe, you know, over 30% of individuals under the age of 42 get started with help from their parents, which is a very normal thing today. But
right.
You know, back then it was a, you know, we sometimes have this notion of, you know, we have to do it on our own. We have to be independent. We have to suffer through the, you know, to be able to get results, to be able to feel like we've earned it, which is a very toxic way of thinking about your results. And I find a lot of times, you know, especially in our community, there's just too much pride. There's too much pride. It's not enough humility.
Dude, you're just like, that's a big one, Mike. There's
a huge one.
Like, honestly, I talk about this all the time, like the pride. Oh my gosh. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but that's a big one.
You know, the pride and fortunately, the individuals that I got around, I mean, I didn't have those 30 transactions that happened. Those weren't done by 30 people. Those were done by 6 to 8 people 2 to 3 times because they understood it right away. They understood the philosophy of what we were doing and the philosophy of what we were teaching. So right away, they put me in front of, you know, a couple of people that are now financially independent. They haven't worked in over 6, 7 years. That have lived up or living off of their passive income from their real estate. You know, one particular gentleman, he put me in front of his father, his aunt, his uncle, and he pulled everybody together and he said, "We have to do this together." He said, "We have to do this together." And he was humble enough to realize that he didn't have the information, he didn't have the answers, you know, and he was going to put individuals in front of me so I can communicate it to them. And then he also ended up reaping the rewards of that as well.
Wow, that's crazy. Like I said, I love the pride statement that you made. It's like a target. Like if I can take an arrow and just like that, it would be right on the head of
I
that one.
mean, Edwina, how many people do we know in our community at age 16 and age 18, they're ready to move out and go pay rent for $2,500 a month?
I mean, not a lot of individuals are in that position. It's quite interesting that you asked that because, I moved out of my mom's house really early too. So, but the mindset is not always there, right? To want to venture off and do your own thing. And also it's really tough too. Like if you come from a poor family, it's really tough to even get in that mindset to even want to go do your own thing because you're already in survival mode with your actual core family, right? So it's really tough. Yeah, it's really tough to kind of answer that question because it's like it really depends on the person's background and upbringing, and especially in my culture and even possibly yours too. It's like some people do come from that background where they don't have that financial support from their family, so it's like survival mode, right?
And I'm talking more so before, before the cost of rent exploded over the last 5 years.
Wow. Yeah.
I'm talking 7 years ago, you could rent a basement apartment for $800 a month. You could rent a one bedroom for $1,200 a month. Because also incomes haven't changed that much from 5, 7 years ago, but costs have changed drastically. And there's a I find there's certain communities that they're okay living with two to three of their siblings under a roof until either they're more financially stable, they're more secured. The more secure, there's no shame in it. Now everybody's kind of forced to because the markets are so far ahead. So obviously we have a lot more young people that are, staying at home and staying at home longer. But if they had the means, a lot more people would probably opt to leave and run home rather than understanding that, hey, we can pay this down quicker. I told someone I did a post a few weeks ago. And I said, if you increase your mortgage payments by 10% extra per year, you will shave down at least 7 years in your amortization period. Just by just
Crazy.
bumping it up, because you're going to shave off so much interest that would otherwise go to the bank, right? These are some of the things that you could do when you're not so eager to leave. Unless, look, I mean, I was eager to leave home as soon as possible. Because it was really important for my state of mind for me to be able to build my business and to do the things that I needed to do. Home wasn't the right place for me to be able to do so. And I know there's many people whose circumstances are very similar. And that part I understand. I'm just looking at if things are similar, would people opt to stay at home till they're, maybe ready to get married or have kids or whatever, where it would really need, for you to have another roof over your head? Or, do we have the mindset still of, let's be proud owners and I live on my own and I pay my own rent and, nobody can tell me what to do. We need a lot of what sets us back and holds us back is a lot between, the conversation we have between our ears.
That's big. It's like what we're telling ourselves
Yes.
every day. That's definitely the foundation. I love that. My last burning question to you has to do with, because like you've been, if I can squeeze in two, I'm gonna try to. But one of the things I heard that you were talking about is you saw a male that was successful and that was actually doing great things, and that kind of brings me to mentorship. So I'm going to squeeze in two questions if I can, but mentorship. How important is mentorship when you're starting a business and even staying in business? How important is actually getting somebody to mentor you or seeing somebody be successful and seeing, I can actually do what this person is doing?
That's a very good question, and I'm sure you get it quite a bit as well in your space. Mentorship is a very tricky thing because people that are successful aren't necessarily looking for mentees. Very few are, but for the most part, a lot of people are just focused on their business, focused on what they need to do, focused on making payroll, focused on overhead, focused on, you know, their deliverables for their clients. Being a mentor is not necessarily something that they want to take on firsthand. The easiest way to do it, which is the way that I did it, was I said, you know, what is a problem that I could solve that this individual has? One of the problems that, so, and then by doing so, by asking yourself that question, you're not approaching the, you know, you're not approaching the relationship from a mentor-mentee per se. You're approaching it as from a place of service. How is it that I could serve this individual so they can continue to do, to run their business? Unfortunately, a lot of times, you know, a lot of people, if they're not getting compensated for whatever they're trading their time for, they might not even be open to the idea of even looking for a mentor, because they don't see the value in trading their time for free, getting valuable information that can save them maybe a decade plus in terms of a journey that they have to go through. So part of what I did was I just showed up wherever these individuals were. There was about 2 to 3 of them. Where are you going to be this week? We're going to be here. We're going to be doing this and so forth. Okay, do you mind if I just tag along, be a fly on the wall, and I can help you guys with your paperwork? I can help you guys to, so back in the day to for a pre-construction, you had to line up sometimes overnight. So you would have to line up the night before in order for you to get access. First person to line up, first person to get access. So sometimes people will line up 24, 36 hours in advance of a project launching.
Wow.
Because the value was really good or the terms were really good. So I would say, okay, well, I'll sit in line for 3 to 5 hours. And they'll say, Mike, you know, why would you? Because you're not getting paid. You're not a salesperson. Well, I realized, well, 2 to 3 hours, we're all going to be in line. That's going to be a great time to, you know, soak up.
Network and connect. Yeah. Network and connect.
I have a friend that every time that I move, he volunteers to come to my place to just put up pictures, to put up frames and stuff. And at first I used to say, why is this guy volunteering to come here every time that I move to help me put up pictures and put up all the stuff on my walls? But then I realized that whenever he comes, he spends 3 hours and he gets free game for 3 hours. You know, whereas, you know, I charge a consultancy piece at times, depending on the setup of whoever I'm sitting in front of. And this individual just gets it for free because he realized that I have a problem and he can solve it and he can do it for free. And he's going to get some knowledge at the same time that's going to help him, you know, with his business and so forth. So mentoring can take shape. It's a very difficult thing because sometimes I have people reach out to me and say, you know, could you be a mentor? And I don't know what that really means in terms of a one-on-one. So a lot of times what I'll opt to do is I'll be a mentor in a group. So instead of me giving 1 hour to 5 people over 5 hours, I'll give 1 hour to 5 people at the same time and just spend 1 hour and have everybody go through all their Q&A.
I love that. So if you're looking for mentorship from Mike, get all your friends together. Coach Mike as a group.
Well, it's a lot easier in terms of time, right? It's a lot easier in terms of time, and it's also a lot easier to qualify as well, you know, who these individuals are that are in front of you that you are requesting your time. But I mean, a lot of times my mentors are on YouTube. You know, a lot of times I spend, you know, my algorithm on YouTube is so good that it knows exactly who I like to see, hear, and learn from, that as soon as I'm done with one speaker, like, you know, it puts me onto someone else I've maybe never heard of, and I'm learning so much from them. And then sometimes when I actually pay to go and see them, I'm actually disappointed, you know, because they're only speaking for an hour, they're saying stuff that I've already heard before and I've already learned. And I wanted to maybe get a chance to go deeper into a particular topic. But a lot of times you can get free mentorship online from YouTube for you to be able to learn and model from. And modeling is another important thing. I don't want to jump into that. I'll let you lead in. And, you know, and well, if we have enough time, we can maybe come back to that.
Yeah, no, I love that you said that, because you were talking about something that actually I speak about quite a bit, is like, what does your algorithm look like? You can always tell what people are up to by going in their YouTube and seeing their feed and their stream. So you can actually curate your feed by, if you click on a video, even once, it starts to bring more videos to you. And I love that you talked about mentorship being online. So that's actually something that's very unorthodox. Like, you don't need to sit down and buy somebody coffee like back in the day. Yes. Or, you know, ask them to pick their, because I know this is something that's been floating around where people don't like that saying, let me pick your brain. Because I know for you, Mike, it probably took you over a decade to get to the mindset that you have. So picking somebody's brain for free sometimes just doesn't resonate with others. But I love that you said that you can go online, because that's like a big thing. Like, YouTube has so much information, and it's honestly like, what are you doing with your time, right? Like, mm-hmm. That's what you're doing with your time. And so I did want to talk about this burning question. So as we wrap up, in a few words, there's a lot of people that is in business, and there's a lot of people that are starting a business, but something that I've just been looking at your background is that you've been in business for a while. It's not like you just started this a year ago or 2 years. In a few words, what has been, or what has led to your success in staying in business?
And in all fairness, real estate was not my first business. Real estate was probably my fourth or maybe even fifth business. So I've been in different, you know, I was in advertising. And we were selling, myself and my partner, we had an advertising company. We would go across the 401, the QEW, and we would try to compete with Panasonic, CBS for the billboards that you see across the highway and so forth. So I've been in different types of businesses. So I've learned and taken everything I've learned, you know, onto the next business to see what is successful, what is not. I have a property management company that, you know, and I have a group, I have another company that is, you know, a pool of investors, and we look at different opportunities, not only in Canada, but we look outside of Canada as well to see what's feasible, that has the best bang, best bang for our buck. Now, in terms of being able to stay sustainable, that was a question.
Sorry, I'm on mute. The question was, how do you stay in business? That's the biggest thing right now. There's a lot of entrepreneurs that are starting businesses, and we already know the percentages. Like, by year two, a lot of businesses are not even making it. It was like a thought that they had. And that's another thing too, Mike. A lot of people have big dreams, and they have these dreams of being entrepreneurs. Being an entrepreneur is the coolest thing right now. So I want all of our listeners to be successful. And through your, like, your strategies, what, like, give it to us. What's the blueprint for staying in business?
Okay. Now, I'm going to say something that's almost the opposite of what you're about to say. A lot of people today are better off getting a job. It's just, it's not to stomp on someone's dreams. Because you can still have a job and operate a business part-time, especially with how businesses are structured today. You don't need a brick and mortar. You can have online presence. You have a lot of AI tools that you can use to incorporate it into your business that, you know, you don't have to give up everything to be able to be an entrepreneur. So I'm talking to the entrepreneurs that feel like they have to give up everything in order to dive into business. That is not necessarily true. You know, when I started, you know, even in my real estate business, I had a full-time job. I had a full-time job at the time, but in over 2 years, I was making as much money as my full-time job.
Ooh, and I just want to pause, because that's actually a big gem, is that you pivot. You created a strategy to pivot. Like, you just didn't say, boom, I'm going to be an entrepreneur. I'm telling my family I'm done. I'm not working anymore. And I feel like that gem you just dropped, a lot of people need to hear that, is that you pivoted. It was like a gradual thing for you.
Exactly. And also, it was very, like, it wasn't comfortable, because during my lunch, I would be driving to sales centers, and I'll say, I have an hour to get to this sales center, get the information, and I need to get back to work. So, you know, so I would try to map my day the night before, and then whenever everybody would go out after work, you know, especially when you're working downtown, there's always so much options. And I worked at the entertainment district, so which is around John and Peter and Richmond. So there was always some pub, you know, to go to, some after hours event. So I missed 80 to 90% of those, because after my job, during my, during my breaks at my work, I was booking meetings to go and see clients and to go meet up with individuals, you know, at sales centers. So I couldn't afford to stay and be and socialize and work up the corporate ladder, but I also knew that that wasn't a goal of mine. So it's important for you to understand where your skill sets are, where your advantages are, and how you can apply it in what you're doing without completely disrupting your life. It's even harder when you have a family, because now you have other dependents. So you can't just quit that stable income that takes care of the bills and everything to go and pursue something that you've never tried and also tested. And most industries are shifting and changing so much, right? Like even in my industry, when I used to manage a real estate office with about 30 agents, I used to tell them, look, at some point, it might not be tomorrow, it might not be next year, it might not be 5 years, it might not be in 10 years, but at some point, a lot of what we offer, we have to either bring more value or we're going to be obsolete as real estate agents. A lot of people are already mad at real estate agents for the kind of money that they make, you know, on sales and transactions. There's a lot of tools. There's a lot of resources today. Clients are way more prepared when they're going out to shop for a home than they were 3-5 years ago. You know, and that's why for me, it was very important to be my own customer first, for me to become the most important customer. Because I know how much money I've helped clients make over the last 10 years. So why don't I jump on the right side of the equation of that formula? You know, a lot of agents get so caught up in the commission side of things that they forget that you have information that could benefit you as a user to be able to propel you as, you know, as somebody who owns real estate, who understands what this can do, you know. I mean, my clients have made way more money than the amount of commissions in terms of what I've made. But another thing is, when I became an entrepreneur, I didn't want to be an entrepreneur. So I finished university and I wanted to be a CFA. And I was looking into the programs. But then when I finished school, there was a shift happening. You know, there was one, you know, the housing crisis in the U.S. had started, and, you know, there was a recession starting. So there wasn't much opportunities in terms of employment. So the market actually forced me to be an entrepreneur. You know, so I assessed where the market was and I said, well, I can't go into a job making $30,000 to $40,000 a year. You know, while I was in school, I was working at UPS making $20 an hour. And then I was about to enter into a full-time job making less than what I was making when I was working at UPS working part-time. So to me, the math didn't add up. So I said, well, if there's a recession coming, most recessions last 2 to 3 years, let me give it a shot, entrepreneurship. Let me see what that looks like. And let me see if I have a chance of being successful, if I have a chance of being successful at it. So I've been going, you know, and there's times where I've maybe bid too much than what I can handle, and I've had to go back into a job. But I've always had the end goal in terms of where I wanted to be. So when I opened up the statement saying a lot of people need to get jobs today, is because right now we have a market that, you know, you can be a UPS driver making $100,000 a year. You know, so why would I take on the risk of entrepreneurship when I can do something like that for 5 years, save enough capital, you know, have, if you're in the U.S., you know, a 401k, if you're in Canada, you know, have something built into your pension or your RRSP. Why would I not do that? You know, but my pride is not in the way for people to, you know, if BlackRock comes into the Canadian market and they offer me a ridiculous salary to go work a job, I am gone. You know, I mean, that it's the biggest private equity firm in the world. Why would I say no? Because I want to be a proud entrepreneur. I still work the same amount of hours, maybe not as much control, but I'm going to learn something valuable that I can apply in whatever my next phase is. So I think being able to assess the time in the market, you know, today being an entrepreneur is like being a rapper in the 90s. Everybody wants to be.
That's a good one. I never heard that one before. That's a good one. Everybody.
I actually stole that from Gary Vee. So I heard Gary Vee say that.
Yeah, I never heard that one before. You can take that as your own because I actually never heard that before. Mike, you have been dropping gems from as soon as we said, let's go. So I want to thank you in this moment for being such a, like, honestly, I've been writing down so much things, all of the gems that you've been dropping. And one of the biggest things that you shared is you have to really delay gratification. So you used to like miss out on the socials, going to hang out with people, and you really stuck to your craft. You stuck to your dream. And that was something you said a lot of gems, but that was a big gem that I caught is like, and for our listeners, whatever you're trying to go after, Mike said it best, like you have to delay a lot of these things in your life to really focus on, you know, what is it that you want to accomplish? If you want to be an entrepreneur, if you want to be, you know, work a 9-to-5, there's no shade and nothing wrong with working a 9-to-5. As you said, Mike, it's definitely being able to use that as stepping stones. And I just appreciate you sharing your journey and sharing your blueprint and your strategies to us, because honestly, that's what this podcast is about. It's about moving her forward. And we just appreciate all of the gems that you've dropped, and keep taking up space in your industry. I really love what you do. I've been following you for a while. So I just think that you're a great leader and you're a great influence for those that are coming up. So just keep taking up space, and thank you for being a part of this movement.
No problem. Thank you, Edwina. And I hope everybody's listening to this, you know, getting that mindset right to be able to level up is very, very important, because the mind will always, you know, your results will always match where your mindset is. If you have a limited belief mindset, your results, you know, you can't have great results and have a limited belief mindset. So, you know, use that to help yourselves level up, and your listeners. Edwina, you know, thank you for what you're doing, because you don't have to do this, you know, but you taking the time to put this together, to put a program and a series of programs together for individuals that, you know, they can get out of their own way perhaps and get some new information, some new skills. You know, this is what it's about. So, you know, it was an honor to be here, and I'm glad that I could take, you know, the little bit of time to share, you know, what I was able to share today. And I'm sure we'll have many more conversations in the future as well.
Absolutely. Each one teach one. And with that being said, you can have a listen. This is like amazing feeling that I'm having right now, because like I said, I feel like I've moved forward in this episode. And that's my desire for all my listeners, is that every time you tap into any episode, you're leaving with value. So thank you again to my listeners, my new and existing listeners, thank you for sticking around, and thank you for all your support. Like I said, we are shifting gears and leveling up, and this is the time to listen, learn, and yes, level up. Again, I'm your host, Edwina McKinnon, and thank you so much for tuning in. And do remember to hit that subscribe button, where we bring 2 episodes to you twice a month, just like when you get paid. If you work a 9-to-5, we drop episodes on the 15th and the 30th. So thank you again for locking in. With that being said, have a wonderful day. Take care, everyone. Bye-bye.